against David, and he says, "Why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart. Thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." Well, Eliab, of course, now we can very well understand why that God didn't choose him. He was exactly like Saul was, and that had already been proven that it wouldn't work. Also, we find he resented David's place of training. "Well, who have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" And this tells us something else, and that is that some people may look down on the ministries that God has given to his people. That is, they may count them as absolutely nothing. People get very concerned many times whenever there's not a great number turning out and things like this. Well, God doesn't deal in numbers all the time. He deals with the quality of people. We find that even though others do resent what God has given us to do, nevertheless, to be faithful unto that. And David didn't seem to bother him at all. He says, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause?" And he just turned to someone else. And verse 33, Saul said to David, "You shall not go against this Philistine to fight with him. Thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." So David is ready to go out against him, and Saul is ready to talk him out of it. Verse 34, David said to Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep. There came a lion and a bear, he took out of the flock, and I went after him, delivered it out of his mouth, and I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him." Now notice that David had already proven the Lord. He was not just a young upstart with big words. He had a testimony, and he knew that God had already been faithful to him, and why should this be any difference? He said, verse 36, "I slew the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Now, they said he has defied the armies of Israel, but he said they are the armies of the living God. He took it as an insult unto God that this man was come out against them, and that was actually the basis of his victory, that the Lord... Verse 37, he said, "The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and the bear, he'll deliver me out of the Philistine too." So Saul says, "All right, go ahead. The Lord be with you." So he knew the real source of his strength. And where did he learn it? Out in the wilderness by himself. And so often our battles are not out where everyone can see us and put us up on a pedestal. Our battles are way in the secret places, in the wilderness places where there is no one there but just us and the Lord. And if you've not experienced that yet, I venture to say that the Lord will put you somewhere where that you'll know there's nobody that can help but him. Put you off in a corner where as the song goes, just Jesus and me, and you'll realize what it means. Well, first Saul put his armor on David in verse 38, and that didn't work. Verse 39, he put his sword and his armor, and he was going to go forth, and he would not go forth then because he had not proved it. Now, there are two things, really, that are brought out here. First, that he could not use a weapon that he had not proven before, and so it is with us. We cannot use weapons of others that we have not proven for ourselves. The only way that you can ever... fight effectually is to prove the weapons that God has given unto us for yourself. All right. So he took a stick in verse 40, his staff, and he chose him 5 smooth stones. Now, this is about one of the most ridiculous things in the scripture, as far as men would say. Here he comes with a stick and a slingshot, and he comes up to the Philistine, towering over him like a building. Verse 43, the Philistine said unto David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with staves?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Well, I always like to answer that question that he asked, "Am I a dog?" Yes, you are, a dog of the old creation, because he literally was. This is what the flesh is today. Verse 45, David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and a spear, but and a shield. I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." So he let him know that he had defied God, he had insulted him. And then verse 46 is some active faith again. "This day will the Lord deliver you in mine hand, and I will smite you and take your head from you, and I'll give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day, and the fowls of the air, and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Now these are pretty big words for such a little boy, but they were words of faith. You see, and not just idle expressions of the flesh and taunting someone, but this was real active faith. And one of David's secrets here is the very last phrase, that the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Sometimes we want to be delivered from Goliath or our trial simply because we don't want to be oppressed by him anymore. But we should come to the place where that our real interest would be that God would be glorified in this trial. Now, that's not easy, I'll tell you that, because when we're in trial, about the only thing that we can think of is the quickest way out's too slow. But we come to the place where that we really want the Lord to be glorified by our deliverance. All right. Next thing, verse 47, this assembly shall know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear. The battle is the Lord's. This is another thing that we have to learn, too, is that the battle is the Lord's, not ours. We may fight and war and do everything in our power and never be delivered. We must realize and learn that the battle is the Lord's. Continuing in verse 48, active faith on the move. When the Philistine rose and came and drew nigh to meet David, David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. This is quite a contrast to what we had over in chapter 13, verses 6 and 7. The people ran and hid themselves in caves and pits and wherever else they could find a hide. David ran toward the enemy. Verse 50, he prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. He smote the Philistine and slew him. There was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore he ran, stood on the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of the sheath thereof, slew him, cut off his head. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. All right, there is an interesting picture of the cross at this particular point, because this corresponds with Hebrews 2, verses 14 and 15. David didn't have a sword in his hand, so he took Goliath's sword. And this is what Jesus did. He took Satan's own weapon, death, and defeated him with it. And that's what you will find in Hebrews 2, 14, 15. All right, after this, in verse 55, Saul said, "Well, who is that young man?" Abner says, "I don't know." Verse 57, David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, and Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. Saul said, "Who are you?" David answered, "I'm the king of Israel." "No." He says, "I'm the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." And so notice that he still took that place of subjection unto Saul at this point, because it was not time for his revelation. And so it is with Christ today. He is hidden today as the king. He is the victor. He has defeated Satan and won the battle, but he is not manifested as the king yet. And so he's still waiting in the wings, we would say. Chapter 18, came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and he would let him go no more home to his father's house. All right. So David actually goes to live in the palace at this particular time. We notice how that he is coming up, and again, find how that when God wants to promote us, he is able to do just exactly that. So he did with David. And Jonathan stripped himself in verse 4 of the robe that was on him. He gave it to David, his garments, even to the sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. Now, Jonathan loved David in a great measure, but we're going to find out, really, I think, a sad story and picture, but he represents so many today. They are true Christians, and they have experiences with the Lord, as with Jonathan's act of faith back over here a few chapters previous. But we're going to find that Jonathan never did reign with David, and we will find the exact reason for that a little bit later. But also notice that he loved David in a great measure, but it was, as we will have to say, it was not that preeminent love. All right, getting back to David in verse 5, he went out whithersoever Saul sent him, and he behaved himself wisely. Saul set him over the men of war. So notice here that he was in subjection unto Saul, and he behaved himself wisely. So it is, we too may behave ourselves wisely if we're in subjection to those over us. And this is a very important characteristic for us to have in our lives, and that is submission unto authority, unto God. All right. As he was under this authority, he was also promoted and given authority, and he was over all the men of war. Verse 7, the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s, and that just thrilled Saul. Not hardly. Verse 8, he was very wroth, the saying displeased him. He said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s. To me they have ascribed but thousands. What can he have more but the kingdom? And this was so near and dear unto Saul. He wanted that kingdom more than anything. And, well, we've seen what great lengths he went to get it, even to the operations and the exhibitions of the flesh that he had done before. Well, especially, we've seen him this way before, but especially from here on, he is representative of those Gentile world powers that are ruling in usurpation. Because, you see, the true king is actually here on the scene, but he is not on the throne at this time. And so Saul was very wroth with this young man, and he hated him continually. Verse 9, he eyed David from that day and forward. And verse 10, it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David was playing with his hand as at other times, and Saul saw a javelin, or he had a javelin, and he cast the javelin. He says, I will smite David even to the wall with it. So he's going to nail him to the wall with his javelin. Even though that David was trying to minister unto him and to encourage him. We feel like this happens to us. We try to bless and encourage someone, and right away they retaliate and do us harm. Well, David avoided out of his presence twice, and because of that, verse 12, Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Now you will also notice here how that we've been mentioning from time to time Saul's insincere worship a few chapters previous and things. And now then we find that circumstance brings out the real heart of Saul. And so it is that circumstances always bring out the true, as we would say, the true metal of people. David was put through some circumstances and it brought forth nothing but gold. Saul was put through some circumstances and it brought forth nothing but filth. So it depends upon the heart with which people are possessed. All right, verse 13, Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. Now, he had been over all the men of war, and now he puts him over 1,000, or he demotes him. David got mad and cried and stormed. And, verse 14, David behaved himself wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. So you see that regardless of what happened to David, he still behaved himself wisely. And this is a very good note for us, that regardless of what happens unto us, we should still maintain that attitude and have that attitude in us. It's not a matter of putting on an attitude, but a matter of having that attitude, yielding to the Lord, and behaving ourselves wisely. Verse 15, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. And so notice the progress that he makes. Verse 5, he behaved himself wisely. Verse 14, behaved himself wisely in all his ways. Verse 15, behaved himself very wisely. We'll find one more after this. All right. Then Saul was going to try to get him killed. He sent him down to the Philistines and thought he'd be killed there. He said, you go kill all these Philistines and I'll give you my daughter, Michal, to wife. David went down there and not only killed 100, he killed 200 of them and brought back the proof of it. In verse 20, Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and it pleased him. So he had this idea, and he went back and with the evidence that he had gotten those Philistines, and Saul had to give him Michal, his daughter. Verse 13, the princes of the Philistines went forth. It came to pass after they went forth that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much set by. So notice that David learned to overcome in all situations. With the sheep, in subjection to Saul, in honor, in dishonor, regardless of where he was, he still behaved himself wisely. And so this is the very height of that. Verse 30, he behaved himself more wisely than all his servants. And notice that his name was much set by. That is, he had a real testimony in Israel. All right. Well, we too can learn to overcome in all our situations. Chapter 19, verse 1, Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants, they should kill David. Jonathan, Saul's sons, delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David that. Said, my father seeks to kill you, now you hide. Verse 11, Saul sent messengers. He was let down through a window, and it tells us even now, the king runs, as it were, but of course, God trains us, and in various ways, and so we find he's doing David the same way. Verse 18, David fled, he escaped, he came to Samuel, to Ramah, he told him what had happened. Samuel went and they dwelt in Naoth. Naoth implies rest. And so it's a good place for us to flee today whenever we feel like that we're really going the rejected way with Christ, to flee to this place. In chapter 20, we find that Jonathan protects David. We'll not go into all of these different things. But we do find that these two men had a covenant. In verse 17, Jonathan caused David to swear again. He loved him as his own soul. Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon. You shall be missed because your seat will be empty. Now, they had a love covenant at this particular point. And Jonathan and he made up a code by which David would know if Saul had changed his heart toward him, and he hadn't. And so David was thrust out really into exile at this point, and so he goes into the wilderness. It speaks of the time right now when Jesus has been rejected by everyone in the camp, the Gentile powers, the religious world, the whole bunch, as we would say. And this is what Paul meant when he said, therefore let us be going forth without the camp, bearing his reproach. And so we are actually in the wilderness with Christ now. We will find what type of people came to Jesus or David a little bit later. But in chapter 21, he came to Nob in verse 1, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David, and he says, why are you alone and no man with you? And David said, the king's given me a business. He told him a lie here. And he said, I need some bread and I need a weapon. And here again is where that the law was offset. The bread was, the show bread was not to be given to anyone but the priest, as you remember. But David took it. And then on down, verse 6, yes, the priest gave him the hallowed bread. There was no bread there but the show bread. So again, the law set aside by the grace of God. Verse 7, there's an interesting character here. His name is Doeg. An Edomite, the chiefs of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. He's a descendant of Esau, and he proved that the line of Esau hadn't gotten any better, as we will notice. In verse 10, though, David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Now, he had gotten the sword of the Philistine, and he went down to one of the cities of the Philistines because he was afraid of Saul. He should not have done this, and we find that he actually had a very humiliating experience as a result of that. And sometimes the Lord puts us through exactly the same type of experience when we yield to the arm of the flesh. It's not his fault, but we learn anyway. Verse 12, David laid up these words in his heart, and he was so afraid of Achish, he changed his behavior before them. He feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his spittle fall down on his beard. Achish said, well, you brought me a madman. Get him out of here. And so they sent him away. Well, you see, he was not really supposed to be there in the first place, and so as a result of that, we find that he did experience a very humiliating situation, but he was delivered anyway. All right, in verse 1 of chapter 22, David escaped, and he came to the cave Adullam. That word means testimony, and of course it tells us of the testimony of Christ and actually abiding with him. Now, there are some various places that David went in his career here, and we're going to notice some of these. Verse 2, find the type of people that were gathered to David. Sister Bodie called these David's DDs. Here they are. Everyone that was in distress, everyone that was in debt, everyone that was discontented. And these are the same type of people that are gathering themselves unto Jesus without the camp today. In distress, I'll say, in distress, because of the things of this world, the wickedness that prevails and so forth, unable to do anything for ourselves. In debt, certainly in spiritual things, we could not measure up to anything that God must have. Discontented with all of the religious sham and all of the different things that are in the world today. So they gathered themselves unto him. He became a captain over them. There was with him about 400 men. And so we find here that these are those who are sharing the rejection of David. Well, a little bit later on, we find those that shared David's rejection also shared his glory when he came into his throne. And the same thing applies. Those who share the rejection of Jesus today, bear his reproach, they are going to be the ones that reign with him and enter the throne room. Verse 5, Prophet Gad said to David, "Abide not in the hole, depart, get thee in the land of Judah." Then David departed, and he came to the forest of Hereth. Alright, this is the next place David goes. It means cutting. And we'll come to the same place, a time of cutting in our lives and experiences as we go on. Verse 9, Doeg. Read about him again. And he was set over the servants of Saul. And since I saw the son of Jesse come to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord and gave him victual, gave him the sword of Goliath. Well, Saul went down there this day, and he asked the priest why he had done all of this and why he had turned David and didn't tell him he was there and so on. Verse 17, the king said to the footman that stood about him, "Turn, slay the priest of the Lord." Now I want you to notice the depths to which Saul had gone at this point. Slay the priest of the Lord, their hand is with David, and they didn't tell him when he fled. And those men would not do it. Verse 18, the king found one that would. Doeg, you turn and fall on them. Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest and slew him that day. 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. And so here we find Doeg, the man of the flesh, that is more than willing to destroy the things of God. And you'll find this to be true today. The flesh will destroy, spiritual increase every time. So in verse 20, one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped, and he went after David, and he told him what had happened. David took responsibility for this. He said, "He saw me when I was there, and he invited this man to stay with him." So we see the decline of Saul at this point. Verse 23, this is what Jesus says to us. "Abide thou with me, fear not. He that seeks my life seeks thy life. With me thou shalt be in safeguard." And so this is the comfort that we have today as we share the rejection of Jesus, knowing that we are just sharing that rejection because he is the rejected one. Chapter 23, they told David, saying, "The Philistines fight against Keilah, and they robbed the threshing floors." Again, the Philistines are the culprit at this point. And so they tell us of the religious beings that would rob us today, the threshing floors. David inquired of the Lord. This is a very good example for us. He said, "Shall I go and smite the Philistines?" The Lord said, "Yes." Now, this tells us that never make decisions on our own and become very presumptuous about something, but rather to consult the Lord, to pray about things, and to really get the mind of the Lord as to what he would have us to do. Verse 5, David and his men went to Keilah. They fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with a great slaughter. David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. You would have thought they'd been very grateful at this point, but Saul heard he was at Keilah, and David asked the Lord. He's in verse 10. He said, "Now, Lord, are these people going to, Saul going to come down here?" And the Lord says, "Yes." He says, "Will these men deliver me up?" In verse 11, he says, "Yes, they will." So, verse 12, we find that, "Will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men in the hand of Saul?" They will. So we see the ingratitude and the independability of the flesh. David fled again after this. In verse 15, David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life. He was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. Ziph means refinery. So we not only get at the cutting, we also get the refining or the fire. It speaks of a more of a degree of tribulation and trial. Verse 17 is, I think, one of the saddest verses in the scripture. 17 and 18. This is Jonathan, Saul's son. He came out to David, and in verse 17, he said unto him, "Fear not, the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee. You shall be king over Israel. I will be next unto thee, and that also my father knoweth." They too made a covenant before the Lord. David abode in the wood. Jonathan went to his house.